We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 345. The Yankees went over, crossed the pond, and just embarrassed the Red Sox on a national stage. All those poor Europeans, all those poor British people must think the Red Sox are a fake team. They must think they're a minor league baseball team because they probably don't know they won the World Series last year, let's be honest. The Yankees dominated this weekend, headlines-wise and on the field. What's up, Scott?
I think they do know because there were a lot of Red Sox hats in the crowd there, so I have a feeling they latched onto a team, or the fact that they just don't want to root for a team called the Yankees.
I think there was actually, though, a good chunk of people in the stands that were from America or expats or something. We actually have an email about that of a regular listener of the show who was at the games. But I know the Red Sox offered up tickets to a lot of their season ticket holders, and apparently a bunch of them bought tickets and went over there.
Ah, interesting. So. Interesting. Yeah, no, I think it was a super interesting dynamic. The second game was more normal than the first game, by some standard, but at least the majority of it. The first game was just incredibly strange. It did feel fake. And there's a couple things that were like very, very clear signs that it was not a real situation.
There's going to be some hiccups.
But it's not even so much the hiccups, because I think everything went relatively smoothly. It was the play on the field. It was the fact that you can't force something that feels unnatural. And I think that's what it felt like. It felt like an unnatural situation for these guys. Ottavino was very forthcoming with the way that he thought, and very, outspoken in the sense that he said it felt like an exhibition game, but they knew it wasn't. They knew they had to win, but it felt like an exhibition game. Like, of course, it makes a lot of sense that it did.
In a way, it's an exhibition in the sense that they're being presented. This is who they've chose. This is who Major League Baseball chose, the Yankees and the Red Sox, to present their sport to another audience. So in a way, they're being.
But when I say exhibition game, I mean not counting.
You mean like a fake game? Yeah, obviously it counts.
Like
in
a game that doesn't count for what you're playing for at the end of the season.
I forget if I said this to you or if I said it to JJ last episode, that it almost feels like the All-Star game would be a good place, would be a good game for this. You could do the home run derby.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Okay, yep. That is more what I think, but who knows? I mean, it was maybe. Do you think Europeans are excited about baseball after this, or do you think they were never going to be excited, and this is just all people who already have some ties to baseball that were excited the game is over in their country?
If we're getting right into this I think the perspectives are very different for what we're looking at. I think that Major League Baseball accomplished what they wanted to do. Major League Baseball wanted to go over to London and they wanted to present two teams that were bitter rivals. So they have a story behind it. They had all that. They got the storylines. You know, I'm sure they had all sorts of clips. I don't know exactly what was being shown over there as far as, local coverage, and then how much of the ESPN stuff I know was simulcast and broadcast over there as well. But so they had all the backstory with the Yankees and the Red Sox. And I think when you're talking about something new, you need a backstory. You need an emotional tie to that game or to those teams. And I think they connected with that. And I think that from what I've heard and from what I've seen from talking to JJ and Keith and from seeing everybody who was over there, everybody there had a phenomenal time. Like, they all had a really, really good time. When you were there, it seemed like everything went very well. I think on our side, when we're baseball fans looking at a Yankees Red Sox game, not caring really where it's played, but it is being played in London, we're looking at this game like kind of a shit show, kind of a traveling circus act. Bad baseball, probably because a lot of the surroundings were new. The field was different. The shadows, the foul territory.
The field was like a whole other animal in this entire weekend. The field
was a totally different
thing.
The field
was a factor.
Oh, for sure. There's no doubt about it. The situation was a factor. The ambiance was a factor. The fact that there were white seats were a factor.
Right.
The fact that there was a big black batter's eye that was completely blacked out and like pretty good coverage, I think, from the from where the batter was, I think it was bigger and a little bit different.
But they said that, I think it was on the ESPN broadcast today, they said at a certain point early in today's game, Sunday's game, the sun was shining off of that, and it wasn't even really black to the batter. That the batters were getting a crazy glare off that, which is why I think maybe we saw from like innings 2 through 4 no scoring today because they couldn't see the baseball.
That's possible. That's
basically
very possible.
Every other inning, there were base runners and people mashing the ball, except innings 2 through 4 on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. When you start out the game and you're putting up a 6-spot, you're like, okay, this is how this is going to go. We're going to demolish them. Then it's the same thing in the next half inning. You're like, well,
didn't that
this
almost
is wild.
Feel staged? Didn't that feel like
part of it was like, okay, Major League
Baseball
is like,
I know it wasn't, but
throw meatballs.
Yeah, yeah.
Throw meatballs, give these guys a show. Yeah, I mean, you know, it was just wild to see how it started and do it. But yeah, the field for sure was a big. You could see how fast the ball was. I mean, there were a couple, you know, balls that were hit on a line to Gardner in left field that just kept going. You know, like super quick.
That's also maybe where the white seats, like you said, came into play because the fielders maybe are picking it up a split second later. So yes, the turf is already faster, but then their reaction time is also a half second slower because they didn't pick the ball up. There was a lot of white shirts, people moving around a lot. And then once they stood up, you got a white seat that affects the ball. Supposedly how the wind was swirling through the stadium because it's an oval stadium. It's not your traditional circle or open air.
Tons of weird shadows.
Open air stadium, yeah.
Which probably make it difficult to see the ball off the bat. I mean, how many balls did we see that went into the outfield that normally like a guy like Aaron Hicks has a beat on, but that just had nothing? I mean, there was that one play where Glaber went over his head that neither Judge or Hicks were even close to the
play. Same thing happened
on
a ball that the Yankees hit over first base where Mookie Betts, I was expecting Mookie Betts to run in easy and catch the ball, and he was like 20 steps away from the thing.
Yeah, it was, so yeah, there was,
the
and
foul
then,
territory,
you know,
the foul territory was a factor.
No doubt about it. So, yeah, the whole field was just a factor. So, I mean, I think my takeaway was that everybody that was there, it seemed like the way that they had the ceremonies and, like, it felt like the Olympics in the beginning because it was, like, a whole show with, like, you know, pyrotechnics and all this other crap.
Music.
But, yeah, music, concerts. So I think everybody there, they accomplished what they wanted to do. They wanted everybody to have a really good time, to watch some entertaining stuff, and I think they saw that, although it was long as shit.
Nine hours and 6 minutes of baseball.
But they're used to that, aren't they? With cricket matches, which are also long as shit. Soccer matches, I don't know. I don't watch soccer, but
are on a clock.
Nor do I understand
there's
it.
There's a clock in soccer.
There's also a clock that's like arbitrary.
You get extra time, but it's usually not. I mean, you told me there was going to be 9 hours of baseball. I would have figured there's at least like a 15-inning game in there somewhere.
I don't need to understand the rules of soccer to know that this was long, and it seemed like the stadium was still pretty full. Up until
the
end of each
game. You go all
the
way over there. You pay all that money to get into the park. You're not going to leave.
I'm just saying, there's a lot of people there that stayed to the end. They wanted to see what happened. And
they almost got comebacks in both games.
Nobody was ever out of that game, either one of them.
You're talking about like sort of the Olympic atmosphere. I definitely agree with that. Do you think that's a reason why both pitchers in both game ones, Tanaka and Porcello, I mean, neither of them got through the first inning. That's like basically never happened before. Where the Porcello got one out, Tanaka got two outs. But Yankees starters this weekend, so Stephen Tarpley, who's not even a major league pitcher, and Masahiro Tanaka went 1.2 innings and gave up 10 runs. If you had told me that, never would have guessed the Yankees win both games.
Right. No, I mean, I think that everything was just very different. The getting the feel of that stadium and the whole thing that was happening, it was hard. Not to mention there were just really terrible strike zones. I mean, who knows? Maybe the umpires were also affected by the way that things were happening. I don't know. It's hard to give them any excuses, but it was just different. And so I think that like everything that happened over there by Major League Baseball, they accomplished what they wanted to. I think they got all that. It'll be interesting to see what Google tells them afterwards, like how many people are actually searching and looking and finding and what the MLB at bat stats come in and like how many people now are watching these games. That will be interesting. And it'll be interesting to watch like the next 3 to 5 years of kids signing up for Little League Baseball if they're putting in programs like that, which I assume that's also going to be part of an initiative.
I mean, I can't imagine that this weekend is – you got to stick with it. I think baseball is going to stick with it. I know they have a plan for the Cubs and Cardinals next year. That'll also be interesting to see how they change – I think they're going to change the field for next year. They're going to do something different with the field.
Well, they have to. I mean, I think they've probably learned a lot of lessons by doing what they did this year. You know, just like they've learned those lessons when they've tried to put hockey rinks in the middle of an outdoor stadium. Like, you learn from year to year what is working and what is not. But, you know, like, this isn't just a Major League Baseball initiative. Like, they're going to have to put money into that youth initiative. And NFL did it with the flag football programs that they're running over there too. That's a big part of what this is, because like you said, this is not something that they're just going to do on a surface level with, you know, just the major leagues. Like, you got to build the game of baseball there.
And that's going to take many, many weekends.
Years.
Many, many trips of games over there. I don't know. I know NFL now does multiple weekends in London. I don't know if baseball will start doing multiple weekends in London. I also know this was...
Oh, yeah, they will.
This was kind of a weird weekend to pick. I don't know. Do they already set the dates for next year? Is it the same time?
I'm not sure what the dates are or when they've picked
this,
them.
This was like sort of the perfect storm of other sporting events as well going on in London. And Wimbledon starts
tomorrow.
Monday. So yeah. I know that's massive over there. So I'm sure they coordinated that so it wasn't on the same days. But just with all the other sporting events going on, the heat, it was 90 degrees in London, which apparently it never does. So the heat was a factor as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it was interesting. That's like the biggest. I don't know. I said this at the end of the game today on Twitter. Like, I don't know what I just watched. Like, I don't know if it was just horrible baseball.
But I had fun.
It was entertaining baseball. Like, what? I don't know what we saw.
Was it?
I don't
that's
know.
That's not. But see, that's the other thing. That's not baseball.
Well, that's my point. Like, was it just entertainment for the people over there? Did they find that entertaining? What that product was, the ball being hit all over the place. I bet they did. I bet they thought that was exciting. So, you
maybe,
know, they don't pick up on the sloppiness of what we who watch baseball every day and have watched it every day for, you know, our entire lives practically. Like, we saw a lot of very sloppy, bad baseball.
I think Manfred is probably most upset with the pace of the games. Because it's been such a big topic for them for the last couple years.
But that topic doesn't go overseas.
No, internally they're discussing, like, shit. We went international and had 4-hour-plus baseball game. The game one took 4 hours and 42 minutes. It was the first inning. We were all at the bar. It was still the bottom of the first inning at 2 p.m. The game started at 1 p.m. It was crazy.
Could you imagine if David Price had started that game?
Right, taking 30 seconds in between each pitch. Yeah. But the thing is, like, so we had – I was at the New York City watch party, BP crew meetup. We had, like, over 30 people there. It was awesome. A lot of new faces. A couple people who just were looking for watch parties who hadn't really heard of Bronx Pinstripes before. So now they're part of the family. They're going to come to the July 20th event.
Awesome.
I got them to come. But we were talking. I was like, would you be here if this was just Yankees Red Sox at Fenway? Would you come to the bar today to watch on a Saturday in June? It was hot as hell in New York City. So the last place you wanted to really be is in the city, because everyone leaves the city when it's that hot. They said, no, I wouldn't. So it was an event that drew eyeballs.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I think that's probably another dynamic too, is that maybe the more casual fan wants to see the spectacle of it as well. So the fact that it was a spectacle definitely drew attention and drew eyeballs from all over the place. So that was a big deal. And that's why I was kind of saying, like, they didn't want Clint Frazier over there talking to the media, because there were going to be so many goddamn eyeballs on it. If he does something that is, you know, out of the park or a little wild, then, you know, you're not going to have that guy out there that you can't.
Clint Frazier wouldn't have been one of the stars. The stars of the weekend.
He would have tried to be one.
The stars of the weekend, from at least the Yankees' standpoint, were Aaron Judge, Didi Gregorius, and CC Sabathia.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was...
as far as who got airtime, who got talked about. Because
Sabathia
Didi
was all over the place.
Sabathia
on the sidelines.
Was all over the place talking to Fox. Judge, when Judge hit his home run, Joe Buck had a little extra juice in that home run call.
Dude, Aaron Judge had a little weird juice
he
running
did.
Around.
Did you see that? That's his playoff smile. That's Aaron Judge's playoff smile.
It was even bigger than that. Like, so that was part of, as soon as I saw Judge hit that home run, then I watched him run the base. I was like, this is an exhibition game. Aaron Judge is acting like a little off the normal path.
I mean, you just hit a home run in Europe, and Didi, one of the only European-born baseball players, hit a home run today. Yep. That's got to be freaking awesome. And
no,
Aaron Hicks,
it's got to be unbelievable.
Aaron Hicks, after the game, said, they will never be able to take away from me that I was the first Major League Baseball player to hit a home run in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty awesome. There's no doubt about it. But watching Judge round second and come around third, pointing up, looking all over the place, like, there was an exuberance there that was very, very different than you know, I've seen. Even the playoff stuff like that, you know, looking over at the dugout, making sure that he knows that everybody on that it was a big home run. It was a different type of big home run. But it just, like, that to me, when I'm seeing, like, our you know, Derek Jeter, straight-laced guy who gives the right answers every time, is the most humble guy, puts his head down, runs the bases, was, like, all over the place looking up. Like, you know right then you're in the middle of something different.
So you're going to get the people who knock it and say it was stupid and that that wasn't real baseball and the jet lag is going to affect them. Because if the Yankees go out this week and drop two games to the Mets, you know that's the first thing that's going to come up. Is the team jet lagged?
Probably. Right. Or just exhausted from the whole thing.
Exhausted from the whole thing. But looking at the pictures of the guys...
And they probably will be.
Yes. But looking at the pictures of the guys on Friday and all the media stuff and getting off the airplane and how excited Judge was rounding the bases... They all loved it. They wouldn't trade this for the world. This is something.
No doubt.
There's such a monotony in baseball. Okay, where are we flying today? Oh, we're flying to Oakland. Then we're flying to Seattle. Then we're coming home. It's like, this is different. This is cool. This is all eyeballs in the baseball world were on them. So they liked it.
Well, and baseball doesn't do things like this. Like, I saw something today that I also tweeted. It was Marcus Goodwin of the 49ers won that 40-yard dash that the NFL did. I knew really nothing about it. I'd seen, like, little things about it, okay? Like, I didn't really know what it was. Taking the gold or, I don't know, some shit. They were racing. Basically, it was a race for the NFL guys. Prize was $1 million, right, to win this thing. Major League Baseball just put a prize on the Home Run Derby on their All-Star weekend of $1 million. And the NFL is putting the prize of $1 million on some bullshit race that nobody knows or cares about in the offseason. Like, that's such a big discrepancy in the way that they handle their players and put them on pedestals and the money allocated to those types of initiatives. Like, it's just, to me, it's just a very telling thing. And you know, maybe this is MLB's first step of, like, getting out of that box and starting to promote, you know, they had the whole campaign of let the kids play and all this other crap. Like, maybe this is just the next phase of what they're trying to do as far as, you know, putting themselves out of the box of Major League Baseball and the old
yeah, I mean,
old
they've been talking about how do we generate new interest in younger fans.
Yeah. It was an interesting weekend. There's no doubt about it. Like, the whole thing was extremely just, like, I'm fired up to talk about it because it was different, you know? Like, even just talking about it is fun because it was different.
And, I mean, looking at all the videos and everything from the George's Box guys, JJ and Keith were over there, had a blast. I mean, just talking to them in chats in the back end, they're saying, I'm glad I was here. This was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. So I kind of had some
the only thing I'll agree with A-Rod is there was some FOMO going on.
Right. I wish I was there watching all that stuff.
No doubt about it.
I wish I was there. So, I mean, you're going to talk to Keith the next episode to get his take on everything. JJ's still doing his European vacation, so we're not going to get him on again. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, everything that went on. Like, the stuff
absolutely.
That we didn't necessarily get to see because there was so much fanfare going on in all the events, too.
And tip of the cap to him in the Irish English accent.
Yeah,
that
it's
JJ
like, where
you're
you go
hear,
with that?
That you're about to hear from JJ, I think, at the end of this episode, because the voicemails were off the charts, I think, for this one. But, you know, tip of the cap to those boys because they went over there and gave some really cool coverage, I think, coming back over with Instagram and Twitter. And they did a really good job documenting pretty much the majority of the weekend. You know, Keith was going around
getting engaged.
Getting engaged, yeah. Congratulations to Keith. But he was also, like, you know, rekindling some old friendships he had with Todd Gurley and Deces Mero. Like, Deces was nice. They were doing a whole bunch of cool stuff over
there.
We
found out why he's why they gave him the name Sweet Beef.
Yeah, Beefy Keith, yep.
So Yankees took the two games. Does this put the Red Sox out of the AL East? They're now 11 back.
It's impossible for me to say no. Because I don't think they're a good team. I think they're flawed, and this just proves to me what I saw last year was like everything went perfectly. Because if you look at the guys on this team, a lot of them are similar, and in fact you have some younger guys now who are actually outperforming what they had. Like first base production right now is much better for them. They have more power. Their pitching is the same. Nothing's changed. The guys are
they
just
got
not
some
good.
Injuries in that rotation, but the bullpen is far worse. They have the second most blown saves out of anybody in Major League Baseball, behind only the Mets, of course, the next team the Yankees are going to see. But that bullpen performance this weekend by the Red Sox, not that the Yankees was good, but
Their bullpen was bad last year too. They had Kimbrel at the end, but their bullpen was
bad
last
year
too.
They had that safety net of Kimbrel. And I mean, I'm sure the Red Sox plan is let's get to the playoffs and we'll do exactly what we did last year, have our starters just pitch every inning for us. Whether it's starters coming out of the bullpen or starters just pitching deeper into the game. That has to be what they're saying internally. I can't imagine they're going to sell at the trade deadline. On Boston radio this week, they actually posed the question, should the Red Sox be sellers at the trade deadline?
It's interesting because, you know, in the offseason, they literally didn't make one move to improve their bullpen.
Right.
They went out and did nothing. And Kimbrel was sitting out there.
They got worse. I mean, they lost their best reliever.
I'm saying they did nothing. Yeah. And Kimbrel went out there and was sitting out there for a long time. And they could have re-signed him, but they didn't. And the reason, you know, we all speculate, and from talking to people who are, you know, close and follow the team, they didn't do it because of the money, because of the where they were with the tax. So what makes that different now when they're this far out and they're going to go spend money and get and improve on that bullpen?
Because
if you have that bullpen, you're not going to get better.
Because I think they are in a position where they know we only have a couple more years. They're in a window to win. They just re-signed Sale to a longer-term contract. They've got Mookie Betts under contract for another year, and then a lot of people around the team feel he's going to walk. He does not want to sign in Boston, apparently.
I mean, if you're looking at the writing on the wall, it seems like they're not trying to sign people either.
Why did they just sign Chris Sale for 5 years?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, honestly, if I'm looking at that pitching staff, like there's a lot of innings on that guy's arm. That guy, the way he throws.
I mean, that rotation is still better than the Yankees rotation.
Yes.
No, I mean,
they're also like, very inconsistent.
There should be no pause. The Yankees' rotation is
no, because I'm thinking of their whole pitching staff.
Huh?
I'm thinking of their whole pitching staff is when you say their rotation, because to me, your rotation's only good for five innings now.
Okay,
on both sides.
But what I'm telling for the regular season, I agree they are not going to catch the Yankees, barring the Yankees losing all eight of those games in late July and early August. That's the only way the Red Sox climb back into this race is if they sweep those eight games. That's not going to happen. They're probably going to go 500. And guess what? You're not going to climb back from 11 games going 500 against a team. So, but when you get to the playoffs, if you're facing Chris Sale, David Price, Rick Porcello, Nathan Eovaldi, or one of those guys is coming out of the bullpen in games, you can get beat. It happened last year. The Yankees bullpen was infinitely better than the Red Sox bullpen last year, and it didn't matter.
You know, I get that, but at the same time, like I'm saying, everything went perfectly for these guys. Rick Porcello pitched like he does every other year, and was dominant against in the playoffs. Eovaldi came out, who's hurt right now. Who the hell knows how he comes back? Also, was dominant. Like everything went right for them.
Going to get another.
It's not happening.
Shot in his arm that last 6 months of robotics, and then it starts leaking oil again, and then he's got to do it all over again.
When I'm looking at what that roster is, they don't put that fear in me anymore. But at the same time, they are capable of a run. And I know ESPN, people were getting all over ESPN for the homerism and Smoltz on Fox for homering the Red Sox and constantly saying they're not out of it, they're not out of it. Like to a certain extent, like I agree because I have a very hard time burying them at this point.
Well, also,
that's all. And also
ESPN's
because I don't want to knock
one of their analysts say, oh, or John Smoltz, he's on Fox, right?
He's on Fox.
Right. They're not going to let that. I'm sure Fox has another couple Yankee Red Sox games on the calendar for their broadcast. They're not going to let one of their analysts say, oh, it's over. You don't need to watch those games in August.
I mean, yeah, but they're always, you know, they've always been kind of on that side of it. Either way, it wouldn't surprise me. That's the big thing. And no, they have to make up the games directly with the Yankees now, mm-hmm. unless the Yankees are going to go on a tank. I just don't see it. I think the way that the Yankees are built right now, they're withstanding bad pitching because they're so
deep.
If the
Yankees didn't
on the
tank
other side.
When they had Judge, Sanchez, Stanton, Severino. I can't even remember the whole list of guys out. If they didn't tank then.
Pretty much the entire starting team.
They're not going to tank now. So,
knock on wood, unless injuries continue to come out, because injuries can still happen.
I don't want to jinx anything because of my track record, but
yes,
I'm pretty comfortable with the Yankees leading the division right now, at least over the Red Sox. Tampa is a different story. They're playing four games at Tampa this weekend. So if Tampa takes four games this weekend in Tampa, then it's a whole different story for that. But this was an interesting quote by Alex Cora. They're a lot better than last year. Their attention to detail. I was joking with someone that their best free agent acquisition was Carlos Beltran. He's helped them a lot. Alex Cora said that after today's game.
And Alex Cora is tight with Beltran. They're both Puerto Rico guys, right? So they they've had, you know, those home country guys have connections in the off seasons and stuff. So I'm sure they talk and just about those levels of detail and such. But you know, he has helped them out. You know, it hasn't.
Well, he temporarily fixed James Paxton when he was tipping his pitches.
He needs to re-talk to Paxton.
Do you think that's a little backhanded slap at Aaron Boone? Like, oh, the reason the Yankees are better this year has nothing to do with their manager.
Whatever, it doesn't matter. The very clear reason why they're much better right now is because they're hitting with runners in scoring position. Like, to me, that's such a glaring, obvious thing that puts numbers, runs on the board that helps you win games. That's the reason they're so much better right now. They're coming through when it matters.
And you could kind of tell that the teams took a slightly different approach to this whole weekend. The Red Sox plane got a lot of attention. The $500,000 chartered yacht, basically, a flying yacht. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the Yankees took a damn nice plane, but we didn't really see videos of it and Instagram live videos of it and all that kind of crap.
It was probably their standard chartered plane, you know.
They had laydown seats and everything, so it's like...
Oh, yeah, so it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
It's not that it's that much... Is it the same one they take to the West Coast, though? I mean...
Maybe. So I know, like, if they're flying... You know, Toronto to New York, they're it's like a regular Delta flight. Like they're not on a regular Delta flight, but it's that kind of plane where like everyone's in a regular seat. But maybe when they fly to like Los Angeles, they're in a lay down seat. I know I saw
Coley Harvey
tweet out that the trainers have notified the Yankees they cannot sleep on the flight home.
Just to get their clocks back?
Yeah, apparently because they're going to be landing pretty late at night tonight.
And they want them to sleep.
They want them to sleep and want them to get reset to next.
That makes sense. When you're coming back from that side, you want to stay awake as long as possible to try to make yourself sleep when you get back. Otherwise, you're not going to be tired and it's going to be the middle of the night and then you're going to be all jacked up for days.
But it was a fun lead up. It was 2 days off before the games, which was also kind of weird because we never really have 2 days off in the same week. But there was a lot of hype building on Thursday and Friday. And I know we got shout out to from Danny. He writes for the Metro over in the UK. Got us a little shout out in there.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. He got a I talked to him on the phone for a little bit just to really tell him some of the backstory on, you know, how a lot of Yankees fans become Yankees fans. And basically the gist of it was that, you know, you're a lot of times born into fandom because the fan roots go deeper. Usually it's a parent or a grandparent or whomever is the person that takes you to a game and then you get latched on from there. So usually generations of Yankee fans are how the families work. So it's something you're kind of born into, but yeah, it's like two sides of the coin. The Boston's the exact same way. You're born into being a Red Sox fan as well, and you're taught that the Yankees are bad, and you're taught that the Red Sox are bad. So it was a cool shout out, and a lot of circulation from that Metro. I love that. 3.5 million readers.
Yeah, so shout out to maybe any new listeners who heard about us in the Metro.
Yeah, very good.
So I don't know. Maybe people use SeatGeek if they wanted to get over to those games. I know they were going for pretty high prices. Maybe you want to go to a Yankees game for a little bit less money at Yankee Stadium. SeatGeek is the way to go. Do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's as if they're so big they can get away with not caring about the customer experience. So what if their site is annoying, doesn't look good, doesn't have events you want? Hello, status quo. The real question is, how easy could it be if those ticketing sites actually cared? SeatGeek is a company that cares. They have over 50,000 five-star reviews on their app. I say this over and over again, but if you have not used the SeatGeek app, you're missing out because it's so clean. It's so easy to use. You scroll through whatever game, whatever event. They have concerts. They have theater. I've used it to go to the theater before. You've used it for concerts in the past. You've gone to see the terrible, woeful Jets. But it's very easy. You just look for those green seats. If you're going on a, if you want a just a good deal, click on green. If maybe you want to spend a little bit more money, still click on green. You could sit closer to the field, but you still feel like you're getting a good deal and you're not getting ripped off because all the tickets are also fully guaranteed.
Watch out for my boys. Don't be sleeping on the boys in green this
I'm
year.
I'm snoozing on them hard.
Yeah, I mean, I am too because I've been let down too many times. My expectations are zero. SeatGeek will even give you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase if you use the promo code that we're about to give you. All you got to do is use that promo code. Download the SeatGeek app today. The promo code is Bronx for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's promo code Bronx for $10 off your first purchase.
So Tanaka gets the start. He doesn't get out of the first inning, gives up six runs. What do you think their plan was? I think their plan going into this series was Tanaka, give us five, maybe six innings. We'll use our bullpen guys depending on the day, and then we'll open with Chad Green on Sunday. That was probably the plan, right?
That was the plan. That's what they were talking about. it went away so fast.
So that plan by 1:40 p.m. Eastern time was out the window.
Yeah.
Why did they not start either Happ or Sabathia on Sunday? A major league pitcher who's on full rest. It's not like you'd have to bring him back on short rest.
I think it was 6 days, actually.
Right. 5 days for CeCe, right? And 6 days for Happ.
I thought it was the other way around. Either way, it doesn't matter. I think what they were trying to do is get those extra couple more extra days, because if they don't throw in that game, then they have that entire trip. Then they have the off day,
and
they're coming
off,
back.
Yeah.
So I think what from what I was listening to from just Boone making comments over the weekend and talking to ESPN and such during the game, it sounded like they were trying to get an extra day, extra 2 days.
But Paxton is announced as the Tuesday starter against the Mets.
Yeah. So, I mean, but you're still getting those extra days.
A lot of
extra days.
They
just wanted the extra rest. I think with a guy like CeCe and maybe Happ too, that as you get older, you can bounce back much more easily from having more days off. It's not a problem. Or resting your body and routine might be more of a problem for a younger guy who's in such a rhythm. An older guy like that, to me, can use those extra days. And I think that's just, whether it was right or not, that's what I think they were trying to do.
Well, it worked out. I think if the Yankees... The Red Sox blowing Sunday's game, they've got to feel like real pieces of shit for blowing that game, because they get four runs. They finally have some momentum. They need to save face. They're also one of the teams that are being showcased right now, and they got their ass kicked on Saturday. And then on Sunday, they come back, get a lead. Rodriguez pitches them into the sixth inning, and their bullpen just completely implodes for nine runs. Like,
what do you expect, though?
No, I know, but that is a game the Red Sox had to win. It's not a game the Yankees had to win.
No, the problem with them is, you have a lead. You're in a place where the ball is flying out. Like, some of those home runs, the one home run, I forget who hit it on the Red Sox. I mean, goddamn, it was damn near a check swing. Christian Vasquez, I think, is the one who hit it.
Opposite field today.
It was damn near a check swing that went out. It was not a full swing. Ball flew out of the park. Like, the ball was flying. The fences were short, but the ball was also flying.
It was also, it was flying. There was a lot of home runs, but I just feel like there was also a ton of doubles down the lines.
Yeah, well, because the ball was also flying on the ground. it was like going at warp speeds on the ground. And if you got the ball in the air, it was almost every time a home run, it seemed like. So
we heard after the game.
How are you gonna hold a lead when you have shitty bullpen and you got to get through three more innings and none of them are good?
Well, I think had they held the lead and the Yankees lost, a lot of people would have been pissed off that they started Steven Tarpley, who's not a real major league pitcher. But so after the game on Saturday, one of the things that was talked about is that breaking balls were not breaking. For whatever reason, the London air, maybe it just doesn't break over there. Like there's some fireworks going off in the background. I am recording outside, so just so you wonder what that is. God damn it, we might have to stop. They're setting off fireworks for the Yankees kicking the shit out of the Red Sox. What was I saying?
You're talking about the pitchers, like the fact that Tarpley started that. Something I didn't understand about that game, and maybe they're going with the whole opener thing, but that Tarpley starts the game and then Sessa is ready to come in. Like, why not? And I guess it's going back to the opener thing. Was like Tarpley the opener for Sessa, which is unbelievably crazy. But why not have a guy that at least has some experience starting a game? Tarpley had never even started a game ever. Like he's a
first
relief
major
guy.
League start in London. That's
a lefty
wild.
Relief guy against a powerhouse right-handed bat, predominantly right-handed bat lineup. That's gonna just if you're missing your pitches, gonna eat you alive.
So this is what I was gonna say. After the game, they were talking about how breaking balls weren't breaking. Happ is a fastball pitcher. That could have been a decision they could have made internally on the fly, saying we're going to go with a fastball pitcher tomorrow. Maybe he'll have better success than Stephen Tarpley, who I believe Drew said in the chat today threw 15 straight breaking balls.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't really know anything about the breaking balls not breaking either.
Ottavino said it as well.
But why?
I thought this was crazy as well because I don't know how wind can affect a ball that you're throwing 80 or 90 miles an hour, 60 feet. But Ottavino said, I didn't have the same bite on my slider. A lot of people said it. Tanaka said it. Boone pointed to it. I know Buster only tweeted about it. Apparently how the wind comes into that stadium
and
circulates.
It
circulates because it's shaped. It was built for the track events and the opening ceremonies. It's built like an oval.
Right.
There's no Major League Baseball field in the United States that's built like an oval.
Right.
With also kind of with overhangs, right? Like it's not a full dome, but it goes further than most. It kind of covers the stands.
Yes. Yes.
So once the wind gets trapped in there, it starts whipping up.
I guess. I mean, if there's multiple people talking about it, maybe it's a thing. But it's just hard to sit there and blame that for. I mean, and if you're just throwing fastballs, like you got problems with that too, because you're just going to get crushed.
Sure, maybe. Maybe they said, you know what, we're probably going to give up 9 runs today, but shit, we're going to score 12.
Yeah, that could have been the case, and maybe they're not going to waste two guys that they know it didn't matter. Tanaka couldn't do anything. Nobody could do anything. So why not just throw Stephen Tarpley out there?
Maybe before the start on Saturday, CC was like, yeah, I want that start on Sunday. And then he saw Tanaka go out there. He's like nah, man, I'm good. I'll pass. Yeah.
Basically, they just realized that one of the team is going to have to out-hit the other team. That's it.
It's hard to out-hit the Yankees right now, as good as the Red Sox are offensively.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big deals. And I think probably that's also went down into it. Like, you're going to score a ton of runs. We got to score more runs than that. Everybody's going to hit.
The Yankees had two six-inning runs this weekend and a 9-run inning.
Although Sessa did pitch well.
Yeah, I was going to say that, yeah. But on...
And that's his second consecutive, by the way.
On Saturday, the Yankees went 9-for-18 with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, that's wild. I mean, it's kind of... When you start seeing the numbers, though, for DJ LeMahieu and Urshela and these guys who...
And six
even
for
when
13 today.
Frazier was up... These guys are hitting, over 400 with the runners in scoring position. So those numbers, while they sound crazy, we've seen that. We've seen that from multiple guys. Like this has been the storyline of this team. Offensively, they're hitting with runners in scoring position, and they're scoring a ton of runs. So it's not outside what they've been doing.
And you mentioned Sessa today. He's the one who settled that game down, kept it at 4 runs for the Yankees to start coming back. Because if he had gone out there and laid an egg like the rest of the pitchers did, he actually probably pitched best of the weekend. He was the best pitcher of the weekend.
He was.
On either side. So if he goes out there and can't give them anything, the Red Sox do probably win that game.
Yeah, most likely they'll just tee off on whoever it was, or if he wasn't right, they would have teed off on him. But no, he's been good. This start and then the outing and then the outing before this as well. He came up in a similar situation and pitched well and pitched, you know, got some depth in there too. So, you know, who knows if it's situational or, you know, maybe he's finding something, but that could be something to keep an eye on.
Couple of injury news items. So Sanchez left today's game. He jammed his thumb in the eighth inning, which is why Romine caught the ninth. Sanchez says, I'm definitely fine. I think it's just sore. So it sounds like they got him out of there. Just he had a long weekend anyway. He's catching almost five-hour ball games. So get him out of there. Yeah. Don't risk anything. I expect him to be back. Voit left the game. They're calling it a core abdominal strain. I thought that was a hamstring when I saw him pull up.
It did look like that. When he first pulled up, it looked like a hamstring. Or I was kind of hoping it was a cramp. It could have been a cramp where he just like locked up. But it was definitely concerning because the way he locked up, I mean, he couldn't even really go hard into second base. He almost just had to like jam his foot in there to get on the bag. Yeah. But it looked like he was definitely caught by. So it looked like he got sniped.
Wouldn't surprise me if he also sits on Tuesday. But Boone said that he could start depending on. So he was doing batting practice today. And
that's good. If you have a core abdominal injury and you're hitting a ball, you're swinging a bat, you know, chances are it sounds like it's not that bad.
So I expect him to play this week. Maybe he'll sit out Tuesday just to give him an extra day of rest. But yeah, that could have been devastating. Stanton out until August. So this was kind of a gut punch on the day they landed in London. Cashman said August is the quote sweet spot for Giancarlo.
Yeah, and you know, again, they come up with these arbitrary dates and time frames for all these injuries and whatnot. You have a lot of things happening in July with the All-Star break, and you know, I don't know who knows. I don't know, whatever they say. I want him to be very, very, very healthy when he comes back, because you know what, they're doing just fine without Stanton, and if he comes back and he's not all the way there, what's the point?
Well, here's the thing that I think makes it interesting. He's out until after the trade deadline.
Yeah, Clint Frazier.
Yeah. No, I think it's a real factor, don't you?
For sure. So, no, I think it's a real deal.
So, let's just say Giancarlo's August 15th, to put it smack in the middle of the month. You're going to risk him coming back and not being fully healthy if you trade Clint Frazier away. Clint Frazier's back could come in real handy in left field if they're not going to have a fully healthy Giancarlo for the rest of the season. I mean, and this might be a fully lost. This might be a lost season for Stanton. He's barely played to this point. The right. Yankees are going to be over 100 games by the time he comes back, and he's going to have missed 90 plus of them.
Right. I mean, I don't think they were necessarily going after or just like really set on trading Frazier in the first place. I think a lot of it is kind of overblown with what's happening, you know, mainly on his end. I think they like the player still. I think they really like the bat. I think what we've seen with this bat is that he's major league ready and effective, and that you better get something damn good for him if you're going to get rid of him, because right now Clint Frazier is an extremely effective. I mean, you look at some of the numbers that guys had in the outfield that were up for some of these playoff or some of the All-Star spots. Frazier's numbers with limited time were pretty close. They weren't far off production-wise. He was right there.
He was one of the more productive outfielders in baseball this year.
So it's hard to say that they just want to get rid of a guy who's extremely productive and
wanting to
right
get rid
now.
Of and knowing that he's your most expendable, valuable asset are two different things.
I'm not even sure that's true though.
If Giancarlo Stanton is fully healthy this year and he was still on the still didn't go on the IL, Clint Frazier is expendable.
But what I'm seeing that you have two outfielders, if you're talking about prospects that are coming up, if I'm including Clint Frazier in that in plans, to me, Florio is the guy that's more expendable than Frazier and could probably land you more because of the prospect status.
See,
it would be
close. I would have said that before the season started, but now that teams know, I see with my own eyes Clint Frazier raking.
But he also can't play the outfield well. He's also got some other things going.
Is he that bad? Is he a clown in the outfield?
In right field, I mean,
is he a clown in the outfield?
It's in right field. He's not good.
In left field, is he a clown?
He was not a clown when he was up in left field, but I have not seen him play left field to an extent. I don't know what he is in the outfield. I need more time to see him after this head injury. Who knows if that plays with his the way that he plays the field? I don't know. I don't know that. Did I think before he came up and showed that one game that he was that bad? No, I did not think that.
He was pretty decent in left field in 2017,
I thought he was fine.
Right? 2017?
But here's my thing. It depends on who you're trading with. Because if you're trading on a team that's 3 to 4 years away, why would they care what Clint Frazier is at that point? They're looking at Floreal, who's one of the top prospects in baseball, and there's more attractive. You could argue that he has as much, if not more, value than Clint Frazier, depending on who's asking for this player.
Yeah. But if you're talking if you're talking to the Blue Jays about Marcus Stroman, they have Vlad Guerrero Jr. up in the minors, who's a young player, young offensive stud. They have Biggio, who's a young offensive player. They'd plug in Clint Frazier into that mix.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. Again, I think it depends on who you're talking to and what it is. But I do think that you can get a similar value from what Florial's giving you as far as the value, too. And the Yankees window is right now. We don't know what Florial's going to be. We think he could be a very good player. He's a freak of an athlete. He could be a great player. Who knows? But we do know that Clint Frazier can hit right now and at a high level.
Yeah, I guess if you're...
And the window for the Yankees is now.
And I know that they signed Hicks for a long-term contract. They have Stanton right. under a long-term contract. Everybody who's a Yankees fan wants Aaron Judge to be there.
He will be a long-term contract.
Right,
yes.
So that's all the outfield spots right
There's
there.
There's a crowded outfield right there. Yeah, so it's tough to see where that is. And again, is he, you know, he's in what, double A right now? So he's a year away, maybe? Half a year away?
Yeah, and I also think that if it's Frazier or Floreal getting traded, you're probably pairing them with some pitching, too.
Probably some young pitching. I mean, if you're going to get someone who's major league ready, you're going to give up some guys that have potential.
Yeah. Speaking of pitching, Severino gets shut down for a week. He felt discomfort when he was throwing. This was a doozy that Cashman said. With hindsight... Yankees should have done an MRI on Severino before allowing him a throwing program. Quote, clearly he should not have started his throwing program.
Yeah.
What the hell?
That's a bad job by the Yankees medical staff. If we're all looking at the medical staff and we've been talking about, oh, their hamstring injuries or this and that, like they're not conditioning themselves well. Look, I don't think that that's a thing for the medical staff because these guys are coming in from different places in the offseason and all that. Like to me, that's unrelated, not on the medical staff, maybe a small, small part of it. But when you don't look your player up and down and what they've said in the past, CSI Bronx, you know what they did with Tanaka's elbow.
Right, right.
If you don't do that on a guy as important and as valuable as Luis Severino, before you start a throwing program, knowing that there's multiple issues going on in the arm that he throws with,
how does that slip through the cracks? Whose job is, who's the MRI guy? Who's running the sign-up sheet?
The MRI guy
who's
has had
signing these players up for these MRIs, and why did he not sign Severino up?
He has had so much practice this year. The MRI machine has been going nonstop.
Maybe it's broken.
It's not broken. It's not broken.
Maybe
because
they've
clearly
used it
they
much.
See something afterwards. It's a matter of making a decision. Oh, you know what? You guys did the MRI, right?
Yeah.
Like it was clean. It was clean. You guys did it? No. You didn't do it,
yeah.
but he's throwing. Whoa.
You know, like,
what are you doing here?
It's like when we get like half an hour into a podcast and we're like, yeah, you pressed record, right?
Look.
He just turned around to make sure.
I did.
Because
obviously,
that fear is real. You feel that in your gut. You're like, oh,
I've looked. I've looked three times.
Yeah.
I'm a doctor. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you get the MRI before you start throwing again.
Yep.
Let's just find out to make sure it's good. This is not a guy that's not a valuable piece. This is not like, you know, Chris Carter.
Who cares?
Or
it
Mike
doesn't matter
Talkman
who it is.
Like, who cares? Yeah, it does a little bit. I don't care about those guys. This is Luis Severino. This is your number one pitcher.
So here,
make sure he's good before he throws.
We're joking about it, but it sucks because
I'm not joking about it. That's a bad oversight.
It could just be a week setback. Could be a week setback. He shut down, and then instead of seeing Severino pitch for the first time on July 25th, we see him pitch on August 5th. Like we don't know, but I'm really starting to fear we're never going to see healthy Severino this year. And if we don't see healthy Severino this year, I don't think this rotation can get them through a World Series. I know they're going to go out and trade for somebody. But who are they going to trade for that can replace when Severino is healthy, right? There's not many guys out there that I think are available. Max Scherzer, I don't think, is available. I don't think the Indians have said we're trading Trevor Bauer. So who is Marcus Stroman capable of leading you through a World Series is
hasn't shown it yet.
Like, who is this guy Castillo from the Reds?
Cincinnati.
Like, who is it? Like, everyone says. So this is something that annoys me when it's on Twitter or on Facebook or somebody. The Yankees need to go out and trade for an ace.
Yeah. Like, who? Jacob DeGrom.
Right. They're just expecting the ace to fall off a tree. Like,
yeah, Jacob DeGrom.
Where is this, quote, Syndergaard ace that we're trading for?
Just go to the Mets. Just get their pitcher.
Yeah. Maybe they'll give us DeGrom and Syndergaard.
Possible. But, no, like, that guy, when we've seen what Severino can do at peak Severino, like, there's not that – there aren't very many. There's, you know –
there's a handful of guys in Major League Baseball that are capable of that.
Yeah. So, no, that's a massive thing. And I know – it could be nothing. It could be a minor setback in the sense that we're like, he's just going to wait a little bit longer,
right,
and there's no damage done. But you just can't get into that situation.
No.
That cannot happen.
So now they're going into a trading deadline, and they're most likely not going to have Severino back healthy yet. Would you agree with that?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it'll be a very unknown at that point. Even if he's throwing,
and they're
they
gonna
won't
have,
know if he's going to be.
And they're
going to
have Giancarlo Stanton still in unknown status.
Yes. Yep, absolutely. And Herman's coming back. It'll hopefully
Herman could be back this week. He could pitch Thursday or against Tampa. Maybe I've heard Wednesday against the Mets. Who knows?
So that's good. But again, innings limits.
Yep.
We got things to deal with for him, even if he's completely healthy. So there are a lot of factors.
And we haven't seen James Paxton look like James Paxton.
Not since early on, you know, before he got hurt.
Like,
I think
five
we saw some
starts, maybe
early.
Five starts before he first went on the injured list. Not even five starts.
No, he's a guy that's got to prove that he could get out of the early innings and throw strikes.
Yeah.
Because if he's not able to do that and be consistently around the plate, he's going to have problems, similar to what Jay Happ's been dealing with. But you know, it's up and down it's up and down the pitching rotation right now. Is the fact that these guys are not throwing strikes, and it's really biting them in the ass. It's happening throughout the bullpen. And it's definitely hitting the starters big time.
So,
and I know CeCe's in a different path because he literally throws them. It's part of his game now. But the other guys, it's not part of their game.
So I don't want to do the sports radio thing. What's your playoff rotation as we're sitting here on June 30th? But I kind of want to do that because I think the Yankees are going to win the division, which means they're going to be in a 5-game series.
It's impossible to say that right now.
I know
we don't know what Severino's health is, and we don't know who they're going to get in a trade.
No, but what I'm saying is it's fine going through a season with an opener situation and relying heavily on your bullpen. I don't know if that's going to work in the playoffs. Because
you don't have to have it work. We saw what the Red Sox did last year.
Well, but the Yankees can't do what the Red Sox did last year. They don't have the starting pitching to do that.
I mean, who's to say that a guy like Domingo Herman couldn't come in relief and dominate like an Eovaldi did last year? I could absolutely see that happening. You don't think Herman's going to be on? He's probably not going to be on as a starter, depending on how the rest of the season goes. He's probably going to be used in that role as a guy who could come in and put out a fire and potentially get more depth than somebody else.
If he's still allowed to pitch, then.
Oh, he'll be allowed to pitch. They're not going to pull a Steven Strasburg where the Nationals completely screwed that up.
They're
like
so
their one opportunity where they could have gone and you know, like competed for a championship, and they sit their guy that was pitching fine at the time. So dumb. I like that to me just still baffles my mind. No, I don't think they would be putting themselves in a situation where they would have a healthy Herman pitching fine, but due to innings, they're not going to throw him.
Right.
Like that would light some fires.
So the Yankees are coming home. Hopefully they're not jet lagged. They're going to be playing the Mets. The Mets are a circus. They are the traveling circus, really the official traveling circus of Major League Baseball. You can't drop these games against the Mets. Like,
it's laughable.
You're riding high off these games in London, and you, rightfully so, you should be riding high, and you're coming home to play the Mets.
Yeah, it's kind of like a wah-wah, but it's also like – it's like
– Subway Series, like, oh, that used to be a thing. Like, that's exciting.
Yeah, yeah, you're going from, like, a spectacle in London to the Subway Series.
A different kind of spectacle.
Yeah, it's definitely like a trap scenario where you got Tampa the next weekend as well.
Because that's legitimately a big series.
Legitimately a big series, coming off of a big series. Guys are tired. So, yeah, this is going to be one of those where they have to kind of gut themselves through it, and the Mets will probably have some motivation on that side just because they've been such a shit show in the media lately too, and on the field. And I don't even know what's happening with Cano at this point. Is he healthy? Is he playing? Like, what's going on? I don't even know. I don't care. It doesn't matter. We'll find out when they're here. But the
we're going there.
We're going there. Whatever. When the Yankees are back is what I mean. The whole point is, like, it's a weird scenario for the Yankees to be in, but at the same time, going to get a lot of attention because it's a Subway Series and the Mets suck.
Maybe it's almost better that they're coming home and playing someone like the Mets who suck, but you can't lose to the Mets. If you're coming home and playing like the Cardinals, or not the Cardinals, like the Reds or the Royals, it's a little different where it's like we can just totally sleep on this team. But you can't totally sleep on the Mets because it's the Mets.
Okay. Either way, it's going to be one of those series where it's going to be hard for them to I just hope they win. That's it. I don't really care how they win. They're probably going to be some ugly games.
Their eye on the prize right now is just get to the All-Star break so we can sleep a little bit probably. And
probably
the All-Stars are LeMahieu, Sanchez, and Chapman. Voit and Glaber got snubbed a little bit. But those three
Judge didn't make it. He was on the
One
of the belly. I mean, he was been hurt.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised he didn't win the popular vote, to tell you the truth.
But LeMahieu absolutely deserves to be there.
I mean, is there a more deserving person in baseball?
Right. And Sanchez, obviously, is what he's been doing.
Overall,
I think just having an overall great season. And Chapman quietly has had a really good season.
Yeah. No, he's been very good. He's been solid. Even though some of the outings where he finishes his job have been a little bit. But that's what he does. You know, it's to be expected. LeMahieu's the big story, I think. I mean, LeMahieu and Sanchez, actually. Because Sanchez is coming back and just showing what we all thought he was going to be. And in fact, I think he's playing better defense. I am totally dismissing this framing stat, by the way. After watching what happened this weekend and seeing some of the close calls that were just not... that were strikes that were not called strikes. I'm like, I just can't take that stat seriously anymore.
What about the fact that he had two catcher's interferences this weekend?
The first one was bullshit. I don't even remember the second one, but the first one, it wasn't even catcher's interference. Like, the ball hit the bat and it went back into the glove. It was weird. It wasn't like a regular Jacoby Ellsbury catcher's interference.
Today
it
was JD Martinez.
Wasn't how it was written.
JD Martinez, who stands deep in the box anyway.
Yeah.
More fireworks for Gary
there
Sanchez.
You go. But, you know, I don't, whatever. The catcher's interference calls are weird and fluky. I don't, unless you're Jacoby Ellsbury and that's the only way you can get on base. But he's been unbelievable. So, yeah, I'm throwing out that stat because I think it's horseshit. I think that Gary Sanchez has been phenomenal. Defense, offense, he's been great. And LeMahieu, yeah, I mean, what do I need to say but more about this guy?
We actually have a mailbag question about LeMahieu.
Unfreaking believable.
In a minute. But first, let's read this Lee Jones from Liverpool. Why don't you read it? Because I think they're going to set off more fireworks, and this will allow me to turn down my microphone for a little while.
All right. Lee Jones from Liverpool. Thought I'd drop you a line with some English perspective. I ticked something off my bucket list Saturday when I finally attended a baseball game. The game definitely had more Americans in attendance than MLB intended. Sure, some will have been expats, but I know that plenty have flown over from the U.S. specifically for this series, including a colorful bleacher section, a colorful bleacher creature. Encouragingly, and somewhat surprisingly, in my opinion, I can personally vouch that every single franchise was represented. Even the likes of the Mariners, Pirates, Reds, Diamondbacks, Padres, and Rays, as fans milled about sporting their colors. The game itself was obviously bonkers, and it met all of my pregame hopes, namely a Yankees win and a home run, as well as countless other highlights. Although my judge to hit a home run and Tanaka to strike out 5+ bet failed very early on, there were a number of nice touches implemented to give it a full American vibe, and passing money/drinks along your row to the vendors is brilliant. I guess they don't do that there. That's pretty awesome. One final point, which is a minor gripe, was the lack of runners on base graphic on the Jumbotron. I'm guessing this is something that is not normally included the way it is on television because you can see the entire field. But when you've got two teams playing in white and the hits and beers and everything is flowing, it's hard to at times keep abreast of who's who and who's on base, and you got two or three bodies hovering over second base. I'm insanely jealous that you get to experience this routinely, and I've already decided that I'm attending next year's Cardinals-Cubs game, especially if, truth be told, I suspect it'll be the last, as baseball doesn't qualify as a niche here. That word doesn't come close to conveying how much of a minority sport it is. Now, I just need to attend a BP crew event at the Yankee Stadium. Keep up the great work and go Yankees.
Well, job. Thank you for reading that. That was a long one. I too laughed at when he said that passing money down the line is brilliant. Like, yeah. I guess that hasn't made its way over to sporting events in Europe. But you know that they don't allow the sale of alcohol at European soccer games?
I did not know that. I know that the alcohol was being sold into the eighth or ninth inning even.
So they trust the baseball fans to get rowdy, but not the soccer fans, which might be fair.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure this was part of what MLB had, you know, put as their guidelines. Like, we got to sell beer. We got contracts. The home team probably, you know, whatever the Red Sox had a contract with whoever their beer vendor is, probably, you know, because it's considered a home game, they you know, needed that contract as well as part of what they do yearly.
So I just thought that was like sort of a good summary from someone who is a baseball fan in the UK and is not familiar. Like, you talked about how we were watching on TV and our perceptions of things, and then what it's like for not an American born person who's been to 1,000 baseball games going over there, but someone who's never really experienced baseball as it is played 162 times a year.
Well, you know, we've had reviews and people who have written us in the past that are from the UK or from a different part of the world that don't get to watch baseball all the time, that have talked to us about, you know, just listening to us talk about it, they've learned so much about the game itself. And that's just because we talk about the ins and outs and the intricacies of the game because we've been watching it our whole lives. So yeah, I think when you're watching it live and in person for the first time, like Lee is here, you're seeing all these different things that you never would see on television. And you're also expecting a lot of the things that you're being fed on television in the ballpark. And I could see how it's confusing when you're, you know, in a big stadium, probably further away from the actual play than you would normally would be in a stadium in the U.S., depending on where you're sitting. But if both teams are wearing white, it could be a little confusing.
That was also a little weird, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was weird because you don't see it. I mean, and from a distance, you don't see the pinstripes. You see a white uniform. So
Sunday, at least the Red Sox wore red.
Yeah. It's there. Look, I think there's probably a lot of these interesting takes from what happened. I'd love to hear more. So if you guys were at the stadium and you haven't called into the voicemail, we have a voicemail segment after this as well. But I'd really love to hear more people's perspective from the UK who went to this game. So if you're listening to this and you live in the UK and went to this game, you know, write us a mailbag or leave us a voicemail because I'd love to hear your perspective on like the way that you thought this whole thing went down. Because I do think there's a very different perception from everybody in the U.S. who watched this expecting a baseball game, but also a spectacle than when you were there. Because I think everybody who was there had a phenomenal time.
Yeah. Next up, the question about LeMahieu. So from Benjamin Payne, when can we start the DJ for MVP hype? You ready to get on that train yet?
You're goddamn right I'm ready to get on that train.
LeMahieu came into Sunday 342, 390, 528 with a 143 WRC plus, hitting 480 with runners in scoring position, and he got three more hits, including a double with the bases loaded on Sunday.
Look, these guys, I mean, this kid has come in here and just been like the big fundamental, the machine, whatever you want to call it, that's steady. Like that, this he walks up to the plate with, you know, a very non-dramatic demeanor. He walks up like super cool, doesn't really like show you much emotion in any capacity, whether it's him striking out, him getting a hit. He's pretty much the same guy. And he's fundamentally one of the best hitters I've seen in a very long time. And the way that he could spray the ball all over the place, like just his mechanics are just so clean and repeatable. And just if you're trying to teach your child how to play baseball defensively, offensively, watch DJ LeMahieu play because he does everything like textbook, the way that you're supposed to do it. And he could play, he's an elite defender at three positions. And I would have a very difficult time saying, I have a hard time believing anybody who says he couldn't go over to shortstop and play a very good shortstop.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably not going to play it like Didi can play it, who we saw just absolutely put on a clinic at shortstop this weekend. But yeah, LeMahieu's definitely their best defensive second baseman, their best defensive first baseman, and at least right behind Gio Urshela for best defensive third baseman on the
team. Not flashy like Urshela is making those plays, but he makes every single play over there. That's the thing with him, is he makes every single – any play that's, you know, relatively routine, like LeMahieu's going to make that. And even the play to end the game, the slow roller to first base, thank God he's over at first base and it's not Luke Voit like lumbering to that ball because he probably would have been safe LeMahieu made a difficult play that looked, it was pretty difficult play. It made it look very simple. He's just been a very steady hand. So yeah, when you're talking about MVP, you need two things. You need a guy to be, you need a guy to have put up unbelievable numbers, right? Because some people say MVP or slash best player in baseball, because that's really what it is. Depending on where your team is, I think it helps you that your team is on first. But the fact that the narrative with the Yankees, that the big guys on the Yankees haven't done what they expect to do, the fact that LeMahieu's been that big guy, Sanchez is right there, but LeMahieu has been just steady all the way through, and the fact that like he is extremely valuable for his team.
I think it's going to be very hard for him to get all the MVP votes from non-New York writers, right? You have to have the flashy numbers. You have to have the highlights to get the votes from the non-local team writers. That's why you're going to be competing with guys like Mike Trout for MVP. Last year, that's why Mookie Betts got all of the votes, all the first place votes that he did, is because he checked the boxes of a lot of home runs, a lot of RBIs, a high batting average, and also a good team.
Well, good thing that LeMahieu is going to check the boxes for the home runs, too. He's going to check the boxes.
If he hits 22 home runs, yes, he hit more than I said he would hit. But that's not MVP-level home run numbers.
You don't have to have MVP home run numbers, I don't think.
I think when you're
a guy like LeMahieu and you're looking at the old school baseball writers and you're looking at the guys who vote on this, a guy that could come over, play multiple positions, walk into New York, not really a Yankee, because he's not. He walks into New York, plays that role, plays every position. Yeah, well, because I think that's partly a factor. I mean, there's a lot of people.
Are you under the impression that you can only be a Yankee once you get a World Series?
No. I'm not talking about not a Yankee from the Yankees' perspective. That's not what I mean.
Oh, you mean
he is a full blown Yankee. Yeah. The shot's not fired by me. Let's get that straight.
He is throwing shade at his boy.
He is every bit of a Yankee to me. I'm talking about from the writer's perspective. That's what I'm speaking.
He's still a Rocky?
Don't get me wrong. He hasn't been a Yankee for a long time. So I think he has a different outlook. He's won a batting title before. He's the guy that comes over. The situational offensive numbers, I think, are going to play a lot into that MVP. So I don't think he needs it. The fact that he is, you know, potentially going to be well above his average for home runs is you're seeing now a jump on that side, too. And I think that leap from where he normally would be could make his 22, 25, 30, whatever it is, make it look much more attractive.
So I think what you said earlier where voters who will look at it and say, oh, Aaron Judge missed a good portion of the season and didn't have the numbers because he missed time. Stanton missed basically the whole season so far. Who is the one who carried the Yankees? It's been LeMahieu and Sanchez. So yep. You might get some cannibalism for MVP votes right there on the Yankees.
Yeah. No, it could happen. But again, you saw that last year with Mookie Betts and JD Martinez and Mookie Betts.
And it didn't matter, yeah.
It didn't matter, yeah.
All right, what's up next?
All right, next one is from Rick. He says, I agree about Clint Frazier. We've had so many opinions on Clint Frazier, I'm not even sure what I'm about to read. Have you noticed his batting stance? It's all about flash. The stance with that front foot looks very awkward, but Clint thinks it looks cool. I do hope the Yanks can get a good pitcher in return when they trade him, and trade him they will.
So it's kind of...
I mean, I don't agree with that,
no.
So I'm not...
So it's ridiculous that... this is where we are with the Clint Frazier hate. Yeah. Like criticizing. So now we're
his
saying,
batting stance.
Now Rick is saying that his batting stance, he does it just for flash.
Right.
Are you like you serious? Like Rick, think about it. First of all, if he wasn't hitting and he was doing that batting stance, maybe you'd have an argument like, oh, he just thinks it's cool, but it's working for him.
He's just trying to get a better view for the cameras for his shoes. For his
right,
kids.
Right. He's got the foot waggle out there. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, he's consulted Nike, and Nike said this is the best angle when you're standing at home plate.
This is the most view. This will get the most clicks on Instagram.
This is how the shadows and the lighting will be beautiful on your swoosh.
See, this is the level of hate for certain players. It gets a little crazy. This is crazy.
It's a little crazy. Yeah, I don't think that that Clint Frazier, who makes his money hitting the ball, is going to mess with his stance only because something's cool. I certainly don't believe that. I think that Clint Frazier hits the way he hits because he's comfortable hitting that way, and it works for him.
It does now, look if you awkward. Talk... I'll give it to Rick. It looks a little awkward. His whole swing looks a little awkward because he's very front foot heavy and he whips the bat through with his forearms. We heard about the lightning quick bat speed that Brian Cashman talked about when they traded for him.
He comes out and gets so much leverage on that front that the back comes up. It similar to what back. Bryce Harper does. Similar to what Bryce Harper, where you see that back foot raise off the ground. Like, not many guys do that.
And it kicks to the third base dugout.
Yeah. And I mean, like, if you look at the way that Judge is taught now and like the new swing that Judge has, a lot of it is keeping your weight back so that you can explode through
and launch.
And launch the ball, but keeping your weight behind you. He doesn't do that, and he can make up for it because his hands are so goddamn fast.
Right.
So whatever it is, it works for him. You know, it is what it is, and it works for him. That is one part of his game I'm not messing with.
Right.
I think he runs weird. Like, I don't think he looks cool when he runs. I think he looks kind of weird.
But see, this is what happens.
A little uncoordinated.
When he does stuff like he did with the media, the hate starts to go to unnecessary levels.
Yes. Yes. It's when you start to not like somebody, you look for everything.
Yep.
And everything.
And I've done it with other players too.
Oh, yeah.
I've hated players for the most irrational reasons.
Yes, like because they're short.
I hated Brian Daboch.
Because they have freckles.
My least favorite Red Sox was Brian Daboch back in the 90s because in between pitches, he would take his helmet off, lick his hand, like the backside of his hand, and rub it on his forehead.
It's different when you're hating an opponent. Like, Papelbon used to make a butthole with his mouth. I thought he looked like the dumbest person in the face of the planet. Kimbrel with the stupid crane thing. Like, I'm not going to lie. I was not looking forward to the stupid thing that Encarnacion does when he runs the bases. Like, I thought that was going to get really annoying. I've changed a little bit because he's now
in your laundry.
And I don't give a shit. But, you know, when I'm watching it from the other team, like, yeah, I can hate some things much, much faster when it's the other team. Like, Michael Chavis, I hate his face now.
I hate Michael Chavis, definitely.
So there's a lot of things that can bother you, I think, when you're an opposing player. But when it's your own guy and you're looking for all these, like, that's like a different type of hatred.
You can
relate to that, though.
Fun little tidbit on Encarnacion. He's the first Major League Baseball player to play in three continents in one year.
Awesome.
I guess you don't think that's very cool.
That's a trivia question. It's an answer to a trivia question.
A trivia question. Next up is from Joe. You ready for some more get off my lawn talk? The Yankees will be wearing black uniforms for Players Weekend this year. I was and am sure most of the fan base was fine with the last few years being blue-gray combo, but a black uniform? Seems to me this is getting out of hand. Most, if not all, of the players on this team understand the history of the Yankees, and I just wonder how they feel about wearing black unis. Guess this is just a get off my lawn rant.
Look, I saw the whole thing about the black uniforms and that they're going to wear them. This is what's happening. They're trying to sell more merchandise. That's it. Bottom line. They're looking for opportunities to sell more merchandise. And this is just another one for them to make an alternate jersey and an alternate uniform. And they're doing it. So look, when they did the players thing and they're putting the like XFL names on the back, you know, I've already done this. You know, I don't care.
This is
anymore.
Year three, right? Is it year two or three?
I think this is three. It's definitely more than two. This is three because it's not. Last year was not the first.
So they started it in 17.
Yeah, I think so. But it just doesn't. I just don't care anymore. You know, I'm at that point. Like, it didn't really bother me. It's like I roll my eyes at it. That's what it is. I just roll my eyes at it.
Well,
I just wish they would do some cool stuff. Like, if you're gonna do, like, my guy Brian Begley is a designer, right? He actually drew the Judge figure from the Murderers Row shirts, the three characters there, and the event shirt that we had, Backs Against the Wall. He drew that. He's an awesome artist, great designer. Look him up. Hire him if you're looking for a designer. He also does uniform design. He designed, I think, one of the alternate or maybe their new uniform, I'm not sure which one it was, for the Durham Bulls. So he does like a lot of uniform design. He put up his version of the black uniform. And like what he does is he brings into historical context. He brings in things like different things from the team itself. He's a Yankee fan as well, which helps. So if they're going to do that, I hope they do it right, at least, or at least try to do some cool elements to it. So like I said, like if you're going to do something weird, like hire a good designer and make sure it's good, you know, like good for the weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we said, so at least my position on the whole Players Weekend thing wasn't that I was upset about it, because again, there's so many friggin' baseball games that if you're upset over them not wearing the pinstripe uniform for a couple days, like, just get over it. But I was just like, who are they doing this for? Because it's not something that I would ever be like, oh, now I'm going to get into baseball because they're wearing these cool alternate uniforms with nicknames. Like, I'm not a huge basketball fan. I watch
it's
maybe,
the kids, man. You're doing it for kids.
But like,
for kids.
I watch maybe 3 basketball games a year. I will always watch 3 basketball games a year. It doesn't matter what kind of jerseys they wear.
But they're not trying to get to you who's already set in your ways and cynical, you know, as shit, walking through life. They're trying to get to the 8 to 10, a 12-year-old kid who
so
says, oh,
you,
cool, this guy's
now,
got a new
you're
thing
dad
on there.
Now, could a kid be like, wow, all rise, alternate blue jersey. I must have that now. I must wear that now. And now I'm going to be a baseball fan.
Possibly.
Okay. I stand corrected.
I mean, my kid is not 2 years old yet, so he
I'm
looks
not
at
asking
any,
you about Kemp. I'm
he
just
looks
asking
at
you
any
what your opinion
he looks
is.
At any baseball player and he says Yankees. It doesn't matter what uniform they're wearing.
You're like, no, that's the Red Sox. Do not.
No, that's
say
fine.
That.
Like, I don't even correct him. Like, yes, baseball, Yankees. Like, that's your association.
Just get,
that's what
just
I wanted
get
to
that
be.
Repetition going.
Yeah, just get it in your head. But I also have a nephew who last year has got into shoes, and it's because I think kids are wearing different shoes, and he saw some cool pairs of
are
shoes.
You a Clint Frazier fan?
I'm just no, he's not. He's not a Yankee fan either. But he's, you know, kids look at different things and they see different appeal, and I think that's what they're trying to go for.
Yeah,
and I'm sure it works on some level.
All right, last couple. They go hand in hand. This one's from Sean. Can you guys give Twin Cities BP Crew's own Lewis a big congratulations on getting married this past weekend? The man even danced to New York, New York with his bride on their wedding day. If that's not a hardcore Yankees fan, we don't know what is. Congrats, Lewis, from Sean and Sean, Twin Cities BP Crew. Very nice.
Yeah, Sean was at the event, the Houston event that we just had. I got to meet him and his son and I think his brother or his cousin. But they go on a trip to a baseball stadium every year, and they were able to come here. They're from Minnesota, obviously.
Nice.
And they're the captains of the chapter.
Hey,
out there.
Who knows? We might see a Yankees versus the Twins playoff series.
Could happen, but congratulations, Lewis.
Very cool. This one goes to Drew Pintus's question. If you could pick one current Yankee to attend your wedding, who would it be? This should be rather applicable to Andrew.
All right, so who you got?
So my first initial reaction was CC Sabathia. Then I realized he can't drink. And I was like, oh, nah, that might be mean, inviting him to a wedding with a nice cocktail hour and everything. And Aaron Judge.
Only a cocktail hour?
No, it's open.
Is this breaking news? Okay.
Scott,
I was about to join JJ's hate.
I mean, I was going to say Aaron Judge, but I feel like he draws too much attention. I don't want the attention off of me.
Right. That's selfish.
Is it? I mean, it's my day.
I guess. Not your day. It's your wife's day.
It's our day.
I'm told
it's our day.
It's her day.
So I think I probably have to go DJ LeMahieu right now.
Wow. I feel like you choked into that answer.
No, I just said it because of our bet.
Yeah. LeMahieu would not be the guy. Like, I love LeMahieu. Probably not the guy I'm inviting.
He'd just
to
be
my
packing
wedding.
Lip in the back.
Yeah, he'd be hanging out. I mean, he'd be one of the guys that's not dancing and just hanging out. I would invite Gleyber Torres because I feel like Gleyber is a fun dude. I like that he wears number 25. He's becoming one of my it's hard to say I have favorite Yankees anymore because I like them all. But I like his youthful exuberance. I think he would bring a lot of fun to it. So I think he'd bring, you know, a little bit of some different dance moves. We've seen him and Didi do the dance moves together, so he can move better than I can. And he'd be fun. So I'm bringing Gleyber.
It's tough for the – like, this is such an easy question if you're talking about, like, of the last 25, 30 years, because then you just invite David Cone and give him a plus one, and he brings David Wells.
I mean, that would be fun, too.
Yeah.
You said the worst answer, though. I feel like you just kind of choked into that one.
Well, I said CC Sabathia, and then I moved to Aaron Judge. Then I trickled my way down to DJ LeMahieu because he's hitting almost 500 with runners on base.
This is a very good time to bring this up, okay? This is kind of the part where, like, you know, when the beginning of the season where we all do our predictions, we've talked about this, we've covered this. I've made a lot of predictions. I've made the good ones. Pretty much all of them are good. And now Luis Sessa, don't call it a comeback, is trying to get out back on this Scott's prediction train. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
He still has to prove he can pitch in North America.
Look, the bottom line is you made one prediction. And your one prediction bombed horribly.
Gary Sanchez?
Nope.
I mean, not Gary Sanchez. Giancarlo?
No.
Oh, the John Sterling calls? Yeah, he didn't do
John Sterling did not change one call.
That's bullshit, though. How does he not do that?
But he didn't.
I blame John Sterling. What are you doing? This is your time to shine.
Your one prediction.
Not
only did you say that he was going to change every call for the British, not only did he not change every call, but he did not change one call.
He was probably still jet lagged.
Every single call the same. So, yeah, I mean, it's really just been a disaster of a season for you personally.
Me personally, but the Yankees are not disastrous. So,
so maybe this is a good thing. You know, if the Yankees win a World Series, then you're going to have to make horrible predictions, and I'm going to have to make very accurate ones. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, we have some housekeeping to talk about real quick, though.
Go for it.
The upcoming events. So we're set and ready to go. If you're watching, you can see my shirt. Bronx Power Company is what we're wearing down to Tampa. I kind of talked about it last time. Shirts came out phenomenal. They're already out in the mail. All the tickets, if you went, the tickets will be going out this week to you. So do not worry about them. They're going to be electronically transferred to you. And I'm very excited. We have, I think, 85 people going to that game, somewhere around there. Going to be a blast. The next one, July 20th. My dates were wrong when I said that the tickets were going to be off sale this past week. That's not true. We have this week that we're going to sell them through as well. I was a week off.
For the Rockies game.
For the Rockies game on July 20th at Yankee Stadium. So we will be selling those tickets through Friday, I believe. Through Friday, maybe even this
July
weekend.
5th.
But Friday, July 5th will be the most likely be the cutoff for the t-shirts at least, and we'll probably sell some tickets after that. But the t-shirts, if you want them, probably going to place that order on that day.
And that game is $69, right?
Yeah.
$69. Saturday afternoon game against the Rockies. They're probably going to be just crying that
DJ LeMay, who's
new
on their
wedding
team anymore.
Invitee is not on their team anymore.
He wouldn't come to your, he would actually turn your wedding invitation down.
See, that's the thing. I don't want any of the Yankees at my wedding because they're going to be busy that day.
Well, yeah, but I mean, even if they weren't busy that day, he would turn it down because you had no faith in him and you hate kids with freckles. So, and then the last event is Saturday, August 31st versus Oakland. That will be our wrap up. And then I just want to make one other quick announcement, something I haven't really talked about on the show, but I've talked to other people. If you've gone to an event with us this year, we're doing something a little bit different. We are going to be doing some playoff games. I've already talked to our guys in the ticket office. If you've come to an event with us, you are first in line to get tickets through us in the games. And basically what that means is that it will probably be in section 205, but it's very possible that we could get other seats as well from another section. But we're going to have them well ahead of time, already reserved. It's not going to be a freaking shit show where you got to run to get your tickets online and you know, sit there, click, 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 click before they sell out and then try to get them aftermarket. You're going to be on a list with us and getting tickets. So we're going to have a block of tickets and we're going to set that up ahead of time. So there's going to be some details on how it's going to work because you got to reserve tickets ahead of time and all this other crap. But just know that. So if you are coming to an event or if you're looking for playoff tickets later on, if that does become a thing and we get into the playoffs, we have playoff tickets available. We are going to be doing some tickets to do that. So all the people that attended with the BP Crew events will be first in line for those tickets.
Very good. You done with all the housekeeping?
That's it.
Nice. So this is kind of like we passed a checkpoint in the season. London seemed like a milestone for a while, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. We've been looking forward to it.
Yeah, and we moved past. Yankees passed it with flying colors. They've had an excellent first half of the season, ready to move into the second half. I know the All-Star break is like the first half, second half, but as far as 81 games go, the Yankees are past it, and they've got a 7-game lead over Tampa before they go and play them for 4 games. So good stuff. We do have voicemails to end the show. Very excited to listen to these, so stay tuned for those. If you guys want to call the voicemail line, 646-480-0342. Maybe tell us who you want to go from the Yankees to your wedding. That's a good one. And why?
There you go. Hey, look, I just hope they don't have a hangover from this trip and they can come in and play some good baseball because there's a big series coming this weekend. And, we're going to be there with lots of fanfare, so I'm pumped up for it.
Good stuff. We'll talk to you Thursday.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out, or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
Scott and Andrew, this is Sean from the Twin Cities BP Crew chapter. Just watched Didi go yard. What a great freaking weekend. The Yanks are killing the Sox. It's amazing. It's amazing to watch. how bad the Sox really are when you get past their starting pitching, which, other than Sale and Price, isn't fantastic. I'm super excited for the second half of the season, and I hope that DJ wins the MVP here. Go Yanks!
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Dan, captain of the BP Crew Hartford chapter. Had a great first event. Looking to do another one in July for sure, and a couple going forward before the end of the year. Sitting here watching the end of the game two in London. Chance Adams just had a rough eighth. What I do have to say about the London series personally is, I mean, it's been exciting. Can't say that. The offense has been incredible. Both pitching staffs have been horrendous. I love the Yankees bullpen up until Adams after Tarpley today. Actually did a really good job. Hopefully they can get back home to the States, settle down pitching-wise. Cashman can make a couple moves. Definitely needs to go get at least one top-tier arm, you know, one, even a two guy. Hopefully Seve comes back from his latest setback. Making at him, they need at least an arm. I know it goes without saying, possibly two. I think they'll settle down. Bullpen's still been pretty solid. It was fun to watch the whole thing unfold in London. Hope you guys are doing well. If you haven't, check this out and you're in the general Hartford area, check out the BP Crew Hartford chapter on Facebook.
Last year, Sonny Gray ruined my birthday with his awful pitching. This year, birthday great. Yankees sweep the Red Sox. They're 11 games back. Let's fucking go.
Day, that's game over. Yankees win. Taking the sweep. Let's go beat these Mets for two games, and then I'll see you boys on Saturday at the drop. Let's bring those flashlights down, all right?
What's up, guys? This is Taylor from the BP Crew chapter out here in Salt Lake City, Utah. Just got done watching the Yankees dominate the London series, embarrass the Red Sox in front of the whole world. Even though Chance Adams might have tried his absolute hardest to keep that from happening. Either way, Yankees, 11 games up on the Red Sox. Keep it rolling, boys.
Oi, 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 it's Danny from London. I don't know about pandemonium in the Bronx, but it's anarchy in the UK or bedlam in Britain after the Yankees swept the Boston Red Sox. They build this as the old rivalry in the new grounds, but really it's just the same result with the Yanks, the Bronx Bombers, bashing up Boston once again. You know all the facts and figures, sort of like a zillion runs scored against the rubbish Red Sox, their bullpen imploding. The main winners was Major League Baseball, really, because this was just outstanding. Everyone really enjoyed it. There was more Yank fans here than Red Sox. It's just brilliant. Go Yanks. See you all soon. Love you all. Looking forward to the parade in the Canyon of Heroes. And keep up the good work. Brilliant meeting JJ, Keith and his lovely wife-to-be, Nicole. Fantastic crew come over. Top guys. See you soon.
Bye now.
Oh, shout out to my dog, Bronx Bomber. Follow him at home if you're English. He's going to be a star. Bye-bye now.
Well, 1776 happened, and I'm glad because baseball is meant to be played here in America, not in London. Wow, that was something. Crappy stadium, 18 miles of foul territory, surface of the sun shining into the field. Goodbye, London. More importantly, goodbye, Boston. It just shows that the Yankees, you could fly them to any continent, and they own the Red Sox. You could fly him to Pluto. We'll still beat him. Boston, you guys suck. Number 28 coming at you. Go Yanks.
Sweep! Yankee sweep Red Sox in my hometown, London. Let's go Yankees. Bit of conspiracy theory on the first game. Bit of a high-scoring game. But nonetheless, Yankee sweep the Red Sox game one. Game two, smash again. Seventh inning, dominated. Absolutely love it. Let's go Yankees.
Top of the morning. This is Jack from London. First time caller, never listener. I'm just calling because I met the Georgia's Box Boys. Great boys, great boys, great lads. That he's strapping lad, very beefy. And that JJ, that lad does fancy a pint. And on my opinion alone, could easily kick Andrew's arse. Maybe I'm from Dublin, I don't know. Great series. My question for you, do you regret not coming and acting as an actual fan? The Queen Mom missed you. I'll hang up and not listen.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.